This is a recording of historical and stylometric evidence for the authorship of Doctrine and Covenants 132 by Paul J. Fields, Stephen T. Dinsley, Jr., Matthew Roper, and Larry Besist. Published in Interpreter, a Journal of Latter-day Saint Faith and Scholarship. Read by the authors. Abstract. This paper examines the claim that Joseph Smith was not the author of the verses in Doctrine and Covenants 132 related to the doctrine of plural marriage. Our examination first describes the current controversy on the authorship of Section 132. We next present historical evidence on the provenance of this section. We then present stylometric evidence on the possible authorship of the text. While it has been asserted that Brigham Young or perhaps some other individual was the author of Section 132, our examination provides solid support for the Church's claimed origin of the section. Our extensive statistical analyses indicate there is no stylometric evidence that Brigham Young or any other potential candidate provided the words in the text of the revelation. There is an ongoing debate over Joseph Smith's teachings about and involvement in plural marriage. Polygamy revisionists are currently asserting that Joseph Smith did not practice polygamy and that the revelation on plural marriage documented in Doctrine and Covenants 132 was added to the text sometime after his death. Some have suggested that Brigham Young was the author of the words related to plural marriage. For example, Richard and Pamela Price state, those familiar with Joseph Smith's prophetic linguistic style have long recognized that Section 132 just does not sound like him when compared to other prophecies by him in the Doctrine and Covenants. In his private writings and letters, Joseph's style is remarkably erudite, poetic, upbeat, and great-hearted. And his verifiable prophetic writings that were published by the Church during his lifetime are known for their marvelous ideation and spiritual majesty. The above words, Doctrine and Covenants 132, do not flow melodically, nor do the ideas build empirically to an uplifting crescendo, as do Joseph's. Instead, they are delivered haltingly and grate on the listener's sensibilities. They sound as if they were authored by a man whose writings are known for their dulcetory and gruff style. They sound like the words of Brigham Young. We examine the issues related to the authorship of Doctrine and Covenants 132 in three parts. Part 1, current controversy about the authorship. Part 2, historical evidence for authorship. And Part 3, authorial stylometric analysis. It is the goal and purpose of this paper to evaluate the claims regarding the authorship of Section 132, both from a historical and a stylometric perspective, taking into consideration not only the claims that someone other than Joseph Smith is the source of the text, but also the claim that the revelation was received years earlier than when it was transcribed.
Part 1. Current controversy about the authorship of Section 132. Among the various groups of people on the Internet who discuss issues related to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints are groups that sometimes are called polygamy deniers. The term polygamy deniers may be a bit confusing since they do not deny that polygamy was practiced among early church members. Rather, they deny that Joseph practiced it. A more accurate term might be polygamy revisionists, since they seek to revise the common understanding of how polygamy came to be practiced among early members of the church. These groups hold that Joseph never practiced polygamy, and in fact fought against it. The practice of polygamy in the church, they claim, was promoted after Joseph's death by Brigham Young and carried on by his successors. However, Joseph Smith is reported to have said as early as 1831 that plural marriage was a correct principle, but that the time had not come to teach or practice it in the church, but that the time would come. The beginnings of the controversy. Members of the church were accused of practicing polygamy as early as when the first revelation on the subject was given. According to Brian and Laura Hales, the Evangelical Magazine and Gospel Advocate, printed in Utica, New York, reported in their February 5, 1831 issue, "They, the early saints, have all things in common and dispense with the marriage covenant." The Hales speculate, "These accusations were most likely the result of critics mistakenly confusing the church's early efforts to live the law of consecration with communal efforts of other frontier religious groups that extended their sharing of all things to include marital partners." The Hales also note that Joseph Smith was working with Genesis in February and March of 1831, where he would have found accounts of polygamous patriarchs like Abraham and Jacob. Furthermore, they note that Joseph B. Noble recalled in 1883, the prophet Joseph told him that the doctrine of celestial marriage was revealed to him while he was engaged on the work of translation of the scripture. But when the communication was first made, the Lord stated that the time for the practice of that principle had not arrived. While there is historical evidence that the prophet's revelatory understanding of plural marriage may be traced to as early as 1831, Joseph Smith's first attempt to practice the doctrine took place later. Precisely when this took place is still the subject of some debate. According to historian Don Bradley, one influential view places the relationships beginning quite early, in spring 1833, while other interpreters suggest 1835. After careful analysis, Bradley concludes that the first plural marriage took place in mid-1836. Around the same time, the earliest public denial that the church was practicing polygamy came in the form of a Statement on Marriage, a non-revelatory document that was incorporated as Section 101 of the 1835 edition of the Doctrine and Covenants. It has been attributed to Oliver Cowdery, perhaps with assistance from William W. Phelps, and was adopted by the church in August 1835 while Joseph was out of town. The relevant portion reads as follows. "Inasmuch as this Church of Christ has been reproached with the crime of fornication and polygamy, we declare that we believe that one man should have one wife, and one woman but one husband, except in case of death, when either is at liberty to marry again." Joseph F. Smith reported that Brigham Young had said that Oliver Cowdery wrote it and insisted on it being inserted into the Doctrine and Covenants contrary to the thrice expressed wish and refusal of the prophet Joseph Smith. Denials of polygamy continued after the death of Joseph. As Mark Tensmeyer relates, the best known polygamy skeptic was Joseph's son and namesake, Joseph Smith III, who famously declared in his inaugural address as president of the RLDS Church, "I believe my father was a good man. A good man never could have promulgated such doctrine." Richard and Pamela Price, part of a break-off movement from the RLDS Church in the late 20th and early 21st centuries, were major advocates of the theory that Joseph Smith was not a polygamist. The break-off movement, quote, "proclaims the original doctrine of the RLDS Church and supports the independent restoration branches that consider themselves to be the orthodox portion of that church," end quote. In 2000, the Prices self-published a book entitled Joseph Smith Fought Polygamy, and later created a website that made the book available at no cost. In 2017, Brian Hales identified Richard and Pamela Price as foremost among modern proponents of the theory that Joseph Smith was not a polygamist. Notably, Professor Matthew Bowen has shown that the leadership of the Community of Christ, known as the RLDS Church until April 2001, now acknowledges that Joseph Smith was a polygamist. More recently, a variety of other proponents of the theory have emerged, perhaps fueled by the advent of self-publishing platforms such as blogs, YouTube, and Kindle books. Professor Bowman identifies Denver Snuffer, leader of the Remnant Movement, as one of today's most prominent polygamy deniers. Bowman also identifies the makers of the documentary Who Killed Joseph Smith as also being members of this movement. This is a claim that finds support in the fact that others who subscribe to the theory are featured on the Who Killed Joseph Smith website, such as self-published author Whitney Horning and YouTube personality Michelle Stone. The documentary film Who Killed Joseph Smith was directed by Justin Griffin and argues that Joseph Smith and his brother Hiram were murdered by John Taylor and Willard Richards, who were acting on orders of Brigham Young rather than by a mob. Of these various individuals, it seems that Michelle Stone has become the most prominent. However, it is difficult to tell how influential her videos are. By one measure, she has an extraordinarily high number of followers. At this time, the YouTube site, 132 Problems, Revisiting Mormon Polygamy, has 118,000 subscribers. By comparison to other YouTube channels, The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has 2.46 million subscribers. The Church's General Conference channel has 634,000. Come Unto Christ has 509,000 followers. And Book of Mormon, another testament of Jesus Christ, has 361,000. The next largest YouTube channel is Mormon Stories, with 289,000 subscribers. Scripture Central has 278,000 subscribers. Don't Miss This has 235,000 subscribers. The Church Newsroom has 227,000. And Saints Unscripted has 91,000 subscribers. Stone's numbers have been called into question on the basis that she had a spike in viewers and does not have a significant number of viewers for each episode in comparison with the number of subscribers. While Stone and others have been gaining attention and appear to have attracted a strong following for their views, recent survey research indicates that so far, these most recent polygamy revisionists have not been very convincing. A recent survey of current and former Latter-day Saints conducted by the B.H. Roberts Foundation found that nearly all members know that Joseph Smith practiced polygamy. However, the percentage of people who overtly disagree with the idea that Joseph Smith practiced polygamy are in the single digits. Nevertheless, while the arguments of the revisionists have never gained widespread acceptance, they have persisted since the early days of the church and show no signs of fading. In fact, in an apparent response to criticism that polygamy revisionists cannot point to reliable academic literature in their support, a new journal has been created with the stated mission to foster a respectful, inclusive, and scholarly dialogue that bridges divides between credentialed historians and grassroots researchers while adhering to high academic standards. For that reason, it is worthwhile to examine the arguments and respond to them. Perhaps in response to the recent activity among polygamy revisionists, the church recently posted the following statement. Joseph Smith introduced the practice, not Brigham Young. Credible contemporary sources document Joseph's practice of plural marriage. Later, many faithful men and women who knew of Joseph's practice of plural marriage gave sworn testimony of it. Claims of polygamy revisionists. Mark Tensmeyer's research compiles the arguments in support of the conclusion that Joseph was not a polygamist. 1. All revelation and statements on church policy issued during the prophet's lifetime prohibited polygamy, including the 1844 edition of the Doctrine and Covenants that was nearly finished printing at the time of Smith's martyrdom in June 1844. 2. It would have been out of character for Smith both to have practiced polygamy and to have been dishonest about it. 3. Smith had denied being involved in secret polygamy several times, especially toward the end of his life. He tirelessly investigated and disciplined those in the church who were engaged in it. 4. Smith's surviving immediate family denied he had other wives. Emma was adamant that she was his only wife. Joseph Smith III also had no knowledge of his father having plural wives or of having conflict with his mother. 5. The conception of David Hiram Smith shows Smith was virile up until the time of his death. If he had any plural wives, he would have fathered children with them. There is no hard evidence of any children born to Smith by any woman other than Emma. Tensmeyer continues, these points remain the main argument of the monogamist model and form the first part of its narrative, the part that explains how Joseph Smith was not a polygamist. Any alternative polygamy origin narratives must, to be viable in theory, also include a counter-narrative on how Mormon polygamy did come about. It is primarily in the counter-narrative that the versions of the monogamous model differ. Central to that counter-narrative is the text of Section 132. From the earliest days of the efforts to deny that Joseph engaged in polygamy, the position of the deniers has been that Section 132 was a fabrication. But if Joseph Smith is indeed the author of Section 132, all of the efforts to prove that Joseph Smith never engaged in polygamy are fatally undermined. It would not matter, for example, that Joseph Smith has no known genetic descendants by any other wife but Emma if Joseph Smith is indeed the author of Section 132. Other evidence marshaled in favor of Joseph Smith not practicing polygamy largely consists of variations of the argument that since he denied having more than one wife, he must not have been a polygamist. This argument loses force and effect if Joseph Smith actually authored Section 132 and simply kept the revelation and the practice of polygamy private among a limited number of close confidants. One of the main reasons that the origins of polygamy have been such a fruitful ground for speculation and conspiracy theories is that the writings and recorded instructions from Joseph Smith on plural marriage are limited to the revelation on celestial and plural marriage, Doctrine and Covenants 132. Furthermore, this section is not written in Joseph Smith's handwriting, thus calling into question in the minds of revisionists whether it comes from Joseph Smith. While it is true that we don't have any evidence endorsing polygamy that was written by Joseph's hand, it is also true that we actually do not have much that was written by the hand of Joseph about anything. Joseph Smith's publications come to us mostly through scribes. The Joseph Smith Papers website explains, "The majority of the time, Joseph Smith relied on scribes and clerks to compose, copy, or take down his dictation of the thousands of pages attributed to him, including sacred texts, correspondence, journals, histories, administrative records, and other documents. Readers should bear in mind, however, that because a large portion of Joseph Smith's documents survive as copies, there is not always a correlation between holographs and more direct access to Joseph Smith's mind. In some cases, documents not found in his handwriting may have a closer connection to Smith's text in his own hand. We should therefore not be surprised when Joseph Smith's support for polygamy is found in the mouths or hands of others. Aside from the text of Section 132, Brian Hales has found that to reconstruct Joseph's theological teachings, one must turn to men and women who personally heard Joseph speak, as well as the recollections of some individuals who were taught by numerous eyewitnesses. It should also not come as a surprise to find that those who practiced polygamy in the early days of the church were quite secretive about it. Aside from violating social norms, openly cohabiting with more than one woman would have violated the law. The Illinois Criminal Code provided that any man and woman who shall live together in an open state of adultery or fornication, or adultery and fornication, every such man and woman shall be indicted and on conviction shall be fined in any sum not exceeding $200 each, or imprisoned not exceeding 6 months. Bradshaw explained, "The term open in this statute is a key element of this crime. The meaning of this term was then and still today is generally understood in law to cover conduct that is notorious, exposed to public view, or visible, and which is not clandestine. Joseph's relationships with his plural wives did not meet this definition. This open standard for adultery remains the law in Illinois. The standard was found to be met in the 1943 case of People versus Potter, where the court upheld a conviction under the statute, explaining, their immoral life was so brazen and notorious that every neighbor was cognizant of it. Their lustful and clandestine impulses had attained such an arrogant stage that the two parties implicated defied the law and order and decency of the village of Sparta. It may be that Joseph Smith believed that he could not be prosecuted for adultery or fornication so long as the practice of polygamy was not open and notorious. This could help explain why we have no evidence of him openly advocating for polygamy and why Section 132 was not published until years later. Of course, Joseph Smith not only refrained from openly endorsing polygamy by outward appearances, he seems to have fought against it. Indeed, among those who deny that Joseph Smith practiced polygamy, one of the most popular books is entitled Joseph Smith Fought Polygamy. Admittedly, it may be difficult to understand why on the one hand Joseph Smith was telling people he only had one wife, and on the other, he was secretly telling people that it was time to restore this biblical practice. The Gospel Topics essay on plural marriage on the church's website addresses this issue. The article explains that as rumors of polygamy spread and as people began to engage in spiritual wifery without authorization from Joseph Smith, Joseph issued carefully worded denials. The Gospel Topics essay explains, "Nevertheless, rumors of polygamy spread. A few men unscrupulously used these rumors to seduce women to join them in an unauthorized practice, sometimes referred to as spiritual wifery. When this was discovered, the men were cut off from the church. The rumors prompted members and leaders to issue carefully worded denials that denounced spiritual wifery and polygamy, but were silent about what Joseph Smith and others saw as divinely mandated celestial plural marriage. The statements emphasized that the church practiced no marital law other than monogamy, while implicitly leaving open the possibility that individuals, under direction of God's living prophet, might do so." Conclusion of Part 1. While those who claim that Joseph Smith never supported polygamy argue that there is no evidence directly from Joseph Smith in this regard, the obvious rejoinder to this is that Section 132 came through Joseph Smith. To paraphrase what Elder Jeffrey R. Holland said about the Book of Mormon, if someone is to take the position that Joseph Smith was not a polygamist, it must be done by crawling over, under, or around Section 132. Since the document we now know as Doctrine and Covenants 132 is dictated to William Clayton, then copied by Joseph Kingsbury for Newell K. Whitney, who later delivered the copy to Brigham Young, there has been some room for speculation that the words are not those of Joseph Smith. Consequently, in Part 2, we examine the historical evidence for the authorship of Doctrine and Covenants 132. Then, in Part 3, we apply stylometry, analysis of word use patterns, to examine the textual evidence for whether or not the authorial style in Section 132 is close to Joseph Smith's style, or to the style of Brigham Young or anyone else claimed to have been related to the origin of the text.
Part 2. Historical evidence for the authorship of Section 132. Part 1 of this article discusses the ongoing controversy relating to the authorship of Section 132. In this second part, we review historical evidence linking the revelation to Joseph Smith. We first discuss the earliest extant manuscripts of the revelation and the provenance of each. We also survey evidence from Nauvoo witnesses who reported seeing the revelation and hearing it read. Then we review evidence from the teachings on the revelation by Joseph Smith and Hiram Smith, as reported by their friends and even some opponents of polygamy, followed by reports of their discourses in Nauvoo on the revelation. We now turn to the historical description of the manuscripts containing the revelation on marriage. Historical sources indicate that the first written copy of the revelation on marriage was recorded by William Clayton in July 1843. Clayton was a bookkeeper who joined the church in Lancashire, England, in 1837. He immigrated to America in 1840 and settled with the saints in Nauvoo. Following the martyrdom of Joseph and Hiram Smith, he traveled west with the saints to Utah, where he remained until his death in 1879. From 1842 to 1844, he served as a scribe and recorder for Joseph Smith. He remained a close associate of the prophet who introduced this British convert to the practice of eternal and plural marriage. Clayton wrote in his journal that he recorded a revelation from Joseph Smith on 12 July 1843. This AM, I wrote a revelation consisting of 10 pages on the order of the priesthood, showing the designs of Moses, Abraham, David, and Solomon, having many wives and concubines, etc. After it was wrote, Presidents Joseph and Hiram presented it and read it to Emma, who said she did not believe a word of it and appeared very rebellious. Joseph told me to deed all the unencumbered lots to Emma and the children. He appears very much troubled about Emma. In 1871, in a letter to Madison M. Scott, Clayton explained, I did write the revelation on celestial marriage given through the prophet Joseph Smith on the 12th of July, 1843. When the revelation was written, there was no one present excepting the prophet Joseph, his brother Hiram, and myself. It was written in the small office upstairs in the rear of the brick store, which stood on the banks of the Mississippi River. It took some 3 hours to write it. Joseph dictated sentence by sentence, and I wrote it as he dictated. After the whole was written, Joseph requested me to read it slowly and carefully, which I did, and he then pronounced it correct. The same night, a copy was taken by Bishop Whitney, which copy is now here, and which I know and testify is correct. 3 years later, in 1874, Clayton provided additional details. On the morning of the 12th of July, 1843, Joseph and Hiram Smith came into the office in the upper story of the brick store on the banks of the Mississippi River. They were talking on the subject of plural marriage. Hiram said to Joseph, If you will write the revelation on celestial marriage, I will take it and read it to Emma, and I believe I can convince her of its truth, and you will hereafter have peace. Joseph smiled and remarked, You do not know Emma as well as I do. Hiram repeated his opinion and further remarked, The doctrine is so plain, I can convince any reasonable man or woman of its truth, purity, or heavenly origin, or words to that effect. Joseph then said, Well, I will write the revelation and we will see. He then requested me to get paper and prepare to write. Hiram very urgently requested Joseph to write the revelation by means of the Urim and Thummim, but Joseph in reply said he did not need to, for he knew the revelation perfectly from beginning to end. Joseph and Hiram then sat down and Joseph commenced to dictate the revelation on celestial marriage, and I wrote it, sentence by sentence, as he dictated. After the whole was written, Joseph asked me to read it through slowly and carefully, which I did, and he pronounced it correct. He then remarked that there was much more that he could write on the same subject, but what was written was sufficient for the present. Hiram then took the revelation to read to Emma. Joseph remained with me in the office until Hiram returned. When he came back, Joseph asked him how he had succeeded. Hiram replied that he had never received a more severe talking to in his life, that Emma was very bitter and full of resentment and anger. Joseph quietly remarked, I told you, you did not know Emma as well as I did. Joseph then put the revelation in his pocket, and they both left the office. Not long after the prophet dictated the revelation to Clayton, precisely when is not entirely clear, this original copy of the revelation was destroyed, either by Emma Smith or by Joseph Smith at his wife's insistent requests. Previous to that time, however, a second copy had been made and entrusted to the care of Bishop Newell K. Whitney. Clayton affirmed in 1874 that this second copy and the one he had made in 1843 were identical. While Clayton's 1874 statement was more expansive and provides more details, taken together, his accounts of the event suggest the following points. Joseph, Hiram, and William were all present at the time the revelation was dictated. Hiram requested Joseph to dictate a copy in writing. The contents of the revelation were already well known to the prophet even before it was dictated. The revelation discussed the order of the priesthood and plural marriage, including plural marriage involving Abraham, Moses, David, and Solomon. It took about 3 hours for Joseph to dictate the revelation and Clayton to write it. Before it was completed, the prophet carefully reviewed and checked the contents for accuracy. Either Hiram or Hiram and Joseph presented and read the revelation to Emma. Emma reportedly reacted poorly and rejected it. At the request of Bishop Newell K. Whitney, the prophet allowed another copy to be made by Joseph Kingsbury. The Clayton copy was soon after destroyed. Clayton, after examining the Kingsbury copy in later years, affirmed that the contents were identical to the manuscript he made in 1843. The contents of the revelation, which is now section 132, is based upon a copy of the document made by Joseph Kingsbury shortly after the Clayton document was made. Kingsbury made this copy directly from Clayton's original transcription. Bishop Newell K. Whitney had the document in his possession until 1847, when he turned it over to President Brigham Young. This manuscript, which was the source text for the revelation that was published in 1852 and for its subsequent publication in the Doctrine and Covenants, has been carefully preserved in the church archives. It is 8 pages in length. In 1870, 1886, and 1892, Kingsbury provided statements explaining the origin of this manuscript, stating that he made the copy at the behest of Bishop Newell K. Whitney in July 1843, not long before the Clayton copy was destroyed. In an affidavit in 1870, Kingsbury stated that on or about 15 July 1843, in Nauvoo, he wrote the revelation on celestial or plural marriage from the mouth of Bishop Newell K. Whitney as he read from the original, which was in his possession. He also affirmed that the same is published in the Deseret News Extra of September 14, 1852, is a true copy of the original. In a second affidavit from 1886, he stated, "I will say that Bishop Newell K. Whitney handed me the revelation above referred to on either the day it was written or the day following, and stating what it was, asked me to take a copy of it. I did so, and then read my copy of it to Bishop Whitney, who compared it with the original, which he held in his hand while I read to him. When I had finished reading, Bishop Whitney pronounced the copy correct, and Hiram Smith coming into the room at the time to fetch the original. Bishop Whitney handed it to him. I will also state that this copy, as also the original, are identically the same as published in the present edition of 1876 of the Book of Doctrine and Covenants." In a third statement made in 1892, Kingsbury provided additional details. "I went into a room by myself, a divided place, a place that was divided. I went off in there by myself and copied it. That is, I copied the revelation on plural marriage that he handed to me, and just as I got through copying of it, Hiram Smith came in and wanted the revelation. The original revelation was what he wanted. He came in to see how I got along with it, that is, Bishop Whitney did, and then he went out and told Hiram Smith that he would hand him the revelation in a few minutes, for I was not quite through copying of it. Well, when I got through making the copy, I took the one I had made myself and read it, and he took the original and read it at the same time to see if I had made any mistakes and that it was correct. And when he found that it was all correct, he took the one that I had made and went out to the door and handed it to Hiram Smith, who was outside of the door and ready to take it." Evidence from the Kingsbury manuscript lends support for the accuracy of his 1892 memory about this transcription of the document. On page 7, the second to last page, there is a superlinear insertion of the words, "and have said they were pure," from Doctrine and Covenants 132:52. On the last page, there are also two of these as well, including the words, "is he justified," in verse 61 of the same. And four more lines down, a word is crossed out, and the word "bear," verse 63, is inserted above the word that is struck out. There are no earlier examples of such corrections in the manuscript. These appear on the last two pages, suggesting that Kingsbury may have been in a hurry to complete his transcription. This is consistent with what Kingsbury recalled about Hiram Smith wanting to retrieve the original a few minutes before the task was complete. The editors of the Joseph Smith papers observe that in the middle of what is now verse 61, that, quote, there is a significant shift in the handwriting style at this point, likely reflecting Kingsbury's haste to finish the copy. The writing is visibly smaller in size beginning at this point, as if the scribe was trying to fit the remainder of the text onto the page. Horace Whitney recorded that his father, Newell K. Whitney, had him make a copy of the Kingsbury manuscript in 1847. Horace noted in his journal, Sunday the 14th, by father's request, went and copied an important document which took the greater part of the day and night. An additional copy has been preserved in the hand of Willard Richards, likely before leaving Nauvoo in 1846, but certainly before 1854 when he died. Joseph's and Hiram Smith's teachings as reported by friends and opponents. On 12 August 1843, 1 month after a copy of the Revelation on Eternal Marriage was transcribed by the prophet's brother and church patriarch, Hiram Smith shared the revelation with members of the High Council. Of those 15 that were present at this meeting, there exists direct testimony from 7, including James Allred, David Fulmer, Thomas Grover, Aaron Johnson, Leonard Sobey, Austin Callis, and William Marks. The last 3 opposed and rejected the revelation that was presented and eventually left the church. All but 2 of the remaining men that were present entered into plural marriage before leaving Nauvoo. Austin Callis, one of the opponents of the revelation, in a May 1844 affidavit published in the Nauvoo Expositor, mentioned the revelation and referenced parts of it, including those that he rejected and were stated as reasons for his resignation from local church leadership. In the latter part of the summer of 1843, the patriarch Hiram Smith did in the High Council, of which I was a member, introduce what he said was a revelation given through the prophet, and the said Hiram Smith did essay to read said revelation in the said council, that according to his reading there was contained the following doctrines. First, the sealing up of persons to eternal life against all sins, save the shedding of innocent blood, or of consenting thereto, and the doctrine of plurality of wives or marrying virgins, that David and Solomon had many wives, yet in this they sinned not save in the matter of Uriah. This revelation, with other evidence that the aforesaid heresies were taught and practiced in the church, determined me to leave the office of the first counselor to the president of the church at Nauvoo, inasmuch as I dared not teach or administer such laws. Former Nauvoo stake president William Marks also recalled Hiram Smith's 1843 teachings to the High Council. While speaking in a meeting of the first presidency of the Council of the Twelve of the Reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on 1 May 1865, he stated, the question arose as to whether Joseph the Martyr taught the doctrine of polygamy. President Marks said Brother Hiram came to his place once and told him he did not believe in it, and he was going to see Joseph about it, and if he had a revelation on the subject, he would believe it. And after that, Hiram read the revelation on it in the High Council, and he, Marks, felt that it was not true, but he saw the High Council receive it. As with the statement by Callis, Marks' testimony indicates not only that Hiram shared a copy of the revelation at that time, but also that it dealt with the then-current practice of polygamy, a practice which Marks, like Callis, rejected. Ebenezer Robinson recalled William Marks, Austin Callis, and Wilson Law discussing the revelation on plural marriage during the summer and fall of 1843. He further recalled them expressing their personal opposition to it during that time, although Robinson had not seen the revelation himself. The other opponent on the Nauvoo High Council was Leonard Sobey, who subsequently provided 3 separate statements discussing the meeting. The first, is an affidavit made on 14 November 1883. He states, on or about the 12th day of August 1843, in the city of Nauvoo, in the state of Illinois, in the county of Hancock, before the High Council of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, of which body and council aforesaid he was a member, personally appeared one Hiram Smith of the first presidency of said church, and brother to Joseph Smith, the president and prophet of the same, and presented to said council the revelation on polygamy, enjoining its observance, and declaring it came from God, unto which a large majority of the council agreed and assented, believing it to be of a celestial order, though no vote was taken upon it. For the reason that the voice of the prophet in such matters was understood by us to be the voice of God to the church, and that said revelation was presented to said council, as before stated, as coming from Joseph Smith, the prophet of the Lord, and was received by us as other revelations had been. The said Leonard Sobey further saith that Elder Austin Callis, a member of the High Council aforesaid, did subsequent to the 12th day of August, 1843, openly declare against the said revelation on polygamy and the doctrines therein contained. In a second statement, in 1886, Sobey affirmed, I was present at the High Council in Nauvoo when the revelation was read. The following month, in a third affidavit made on 23 March 1886, Sobey stated that on or about the 12th day of August 1843, I was a resident of Nauvoo, Hancock County, State of Illinois, and being a member of the High Council of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, was present at a meeting of said council at the time herein above stated. Thomas Grover, Alpheus Cutler, David Fulmer, William Huntington, and others, when Elder Hiram Smith, after certain explanations, read the revelation on celestial marriage. I have read and examined carefully said revelation since published in the Doctrine and Covenants of said church, and say to the best of my knowledge and belief it is the same, word for word, as the revelation then read by Hiram Smith. The deponent says further that the revelation did not originate with Brigham Young, as some persons have falsely stated, but was received by the prophet Joseph Smith and read in the High Council by his authority as a revelation to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It is significant that the three members of the High Council who opposed and rejected the revelation and teachings of Hiram Smith relating to that revelation affirmed that it discussed polygamy, or the plurality of wives, not just as it was practiced anciently, but its latter-day practice. Callis, in fact, stated that those teachings about its practice and his refusal to administer or teach that doctrine were a primary reason for his resignation as a counselor in the Nauvoo Stake Presidency. Sobey affirmed that it was the same as the revelation published in 1852, which is now Section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants. Four other members of the Nauvoo High Council, David Fulmer, Thomas Grover, James Alred, and Aaron Johnson, provided affidavits in 1869. According to Fulmer, Dunbar Wilson made inquiry in relation to the subject of plurality of wives, as there were rumors afloat respecting it, and he was satisfied there was something in those rumors, and he wanted to know what it was. Upon which the said Hiram Smith stepped across the road to his residence, and soon returned bringing with him a copy of the revelation on celestial marriage given to Joseph Smith, July 12, AD 1843, and read the same to the High Council and bore testimony to its truth. David Fulmer further saith that William Marks, Austin Callis, and Leonard Sobey were the only persons present who did not receive the revelation and testimony of Hiram Smith, and that all others did receive it from the teaching and testimony of said Hiram Smith. And further, that the copy of said revelation on celestial marriage published in the Deseret News Extra of September 14, AD 1852, is a true copy of the same. Thomas Grover, in an affidavit sworn on 6 July 1869, testified that on this occasion, Hiram Smith reasoned upon said revelation for about an hour, clearly explaining the same, and then enjoined it upon the said council to receive and acknowledge the same, or they would be damned. And further, that from the day that William Marks A.A. Callis and L. Sobey refused to receive said revelation as from God. They continued to dwindle until they apostatized. Two additional statements were made in October 1869. James Allred testified that he was present at the High Council on or about the 12th day of August, A.D. 1843, held in Hiram Smith's brick office in the Nauvoo, Hancock County, Illinois. When Hiram Smith read the revelation on celestial marriage to said High Council and enjoined it upon them to manifest their willingness to receive or reject the same, at the same time bearing testimony of its truth. William Marks, A.A. Callis, and Leonard Sobey were the only members of the council present who voted against the revelation and the testimony of Hiram. Aaron Johnson testified that he was present when Hiram Smith presented and read the revelation on celestial marriage, given or dated July 12, 1843. And Johnson affirmed the truthfulness of his testimony given of the testimony given by Fulmer, Grover, and Allred. On 10 October, Fulmer, Grover, and Johnson also provided a joint affidavit that stated, "We hereby jointly and severally certify that on the 12th day of August, A.D. 1843, Hiram Smith presented to the High Council in his brick office at Nauvoo, assembled the revelation on celestial marriage given to Joseph Smith and written on the 12th day of July, 1843, and that the teaching of Hiram Smith referred to in the minutes of the council of said 12th day of August, 1843, was on the subject of said revelation, endorsing the same and enjoining it on the council." In addition to the firsthand testimony of members of the High Council who opposed and those who supported Hiram Smith's teachings on that occasion and the revelation that was read, there was secondary testimony from others who were told about the meeting shortly thereafter. Hosea Stout, who kept minutes at the High Council meetings but was apparently not present at the time, stated that shortly thereafter I saw several of the counselors who informed me as to the purport of the revelation, which corresponded to what is published and is now in the Book of Doctrine and Covenants. Apostle Lyman White did not follow the saints to Utah, but settled in Texas until his death in 1858. Gideon Carter, an associate who never joined a restoration group, reported that White told him that he saw and heard the revelation establishing plural marriage before Joseph Smith's death. He also reported that White often described Hiram Smith's initial negative reaction to the revelation and his eventual conversion after Joseph told Hiram to ask God if it was true. The matter caused Hiram much distress and anguish of heart. He well nigh sweat blood over it, so repugnant was it to his feelings, and such his dread of seeing it introduced into the church. But he inquired of God, according to White's statement, and he received from the Lord the same revelation that Joseph had, that it was a true doctrine and a commandment from God. That revelation was made known to some of the 12 before Joseph's death, and after it was read in one of the council meetings with some of the 12, Joseph bore testimony that it was of God, and it was a principle wherein there was wisdom, truth, and virtue, and capable of bringing great good to the world, but owing to the sinfulness of men and their weakness, it would damn more men than it would save. James Lighthead, a member of the church in Nauvoo, in a late recollection stated that while at Hiram's house in the summer of 1843, Hiram told him about the revelation and said that he had carried that revelation to the High Council for their consideration, and that most of those present received it, though several rejected it. Mercy Rachel Fielding Thompson, the widow of the prophet's former scribe Robert B. Thompson, stated that Hiram had told her that he had read the revelation to the High Council. She also stated, "He put it into my hands and left it with me for several days." Other members of the church stated that Joseph and Hiram had shared and allowed them to even examine and read the revelation on plural marriage, including Cyrus Wheelock, Charles Lambert, Lucy Walker, Melissa Lott, plural wives of Joseph, and others. Ebenezer Robinson, who rejected plural marriage, affirmed that Hiram Smith taught the doctrine to him and his wife in the fall and winter of 1843. Writing to Joseph Smith III in 1873, he reluctantly chided the prophet's son for claiming that neither Joseph nor Hiram ever supported or built up polygamy. He wrote, "Now, if teaching a doctrine and recommending others to embrace and practice it is not building it up, then I do not understand the English language. This your Uncle Hiram did. He came to our house in Nauvoo, Illinois in the fall, say November and December of 1843, and taught the doctrine to myself and wife more than once. The Robinsons later rejected it." William Law and his wife Jane both rejected the revelation and thereafter apostatized, swore affidavits published in the Nauvoo Expositor stating in 1844 that they had both read the revelation and discussed it before rejecting it and turning against the prophet Joseph. In his 1844 affidavit, William Law states, "I hereby certify that Hiram Smith did in his office read to me a certain written document, which he said was a revelation from God. He said that he was with Joseph when it was received. He afterwards gave me the document to read, and I took it to my house and read it and showed it to my wife, and returned it the next day. The revelation, so-called, authorized certain men to have more wives than one at a time, in this world and in the world to come. It said this was the law, and commended Joseph to enter into the law, and also that he should administer to others. Several other items were in the revelation supporting the above doctrines." In an 1844 affidavit, Jane Law stated, "I certify that I read the revelation referred to in the above affidavit of my husband. It sustained in strong terms the doctrine of more wives than one at a time, in this world and in the next, and it authorized some to have that the number of 10, and set forth that those women who would not allow their husbands to have more wives than one should be under condemnation before God." Years later, in 1885, William Law stated, "In 1843, Hiram Smith handed to me a writing to read, to be returned to him. I took it home, and upon reading it, found that it purported to be a revelation to Joseph Smith, authorizing polygamy in the church. After reading it, I went directly to Joseph Smith and showed him the document. He looked at it and said it was all right, said it was a great privilege granted to the high priesthood. He spoke strongly in its favor. I remarked that it was in contradiction to Doctrine and Covenants section 101 in the 1835 publication. He said they were given when the church was in its infancy, when they were babes, and had to be fed on milk, but now they were strong and must have meat. He seemed much disappointed in my not receiving the revelation. He was very anxious that I would accept the doctrine and sustain him in it." When interviewed 2 years later, in 1887, Law was asked what he remembered about the revelation on marriage. He replied, "Hiram gave it to me in his office, told me to take it home and read it, and then be careful with it and bring it back again. I took it home and read it and showed it to my wife. She and I were just turned upside down by it. We did not know what to do. I said to my wife that I would take it over to Joseph and ask him about it. I did not believe that he would acknowledge it, and I said so to my wife. But she was not of my opinion. She felt perfectly sure that he would father it. When I came to Joseph and showed him the paper, he said, 'Yes, that is a genuine revelation.' I said to the prophet, 'But in the Book of Doctrine and Covenants, there is a revelation contrary to this.' 'Oh,' said Joseph, 'that was given when the church was in its infancy. Then it was all right to feed people on milk, but now it's necessary to give them strong meat.' We talked a long time about it. Finally, our discussion became very hot, and we gave it up. From that time on, the breach between us became more open and more decided every day, after having been prepared for a long time." For further details on this testimony and references to the revelation, see Appendix A. Reports of Joseph's and Hiram's Nauvoo Discourses on the Revelation. Additional evidence for the existence of the revelation on eternal marriage in Nauvoo can be found in reports of discourses by Joseph and Hiram Smith from 1843 until their deaths in June 1844. There is, in fact, historical evidence that Joseph Smith was already familiar with the contents and principles of that revelation before 12 July 1843. The revelation responds to questions regarding how God justified some of the ancient patriarchs and prophets in having many wives and concubines, Doctrine and Covenants 132:1, and another question regarding adultery in verse 41. The latter portion of the revelation conveys commandments given to Emma Smith, plus a few doctrinal matters. This has led some historians to suggest that the earlier portions of the revelation, perhaps verses 1 to 50, may have been received in Ohio, though not written at that time, while the latter portion addressing Emma Smith, say 51 to 56, was added during the Nauvoo period, when the combined revelations were written down for the first time. William Clayton reported some of the prophet's teachings while Joseph was visiting with some of the saints in Ramis, Illinois, on 16 May 1843. He said that except a man and his wife enter into an everlasting covenant and be married for eternity, while in this probation, by the power and authority of the holy priesthood, they will cease to increase when they die. They will not have any children in the resurrection. But those who are married by the power and authority of the priesthood in this life continue without committing the sin against the Holy Ghost, will continue to increase and have children in the celestial glory. The unpardonable sin is to shed innocent blood or to be an accessory thereto. All other sins will be visited with judgment in the flesh and the spirit being delivered to the buffetings of Satan until the day of the Lord Jesus. Joseph Smith preached another discourse on 21 May, 1843, notes of which were recorded by Willard Richards, Franklin D. Richards, and Howard Corey. These seem to make reference to Doctrine and Covenants 132, verse 7. According to Willard Richards' account, Joseph said, "We have no claim in our eternal comfort in relation to eternal things unless our actions and contracts and all things tend to this end." According to the account of Franklin D. Richards, Joseph taught, "Our covenants here are of no force one with another except made in view of eternity." Howard Corey recorded, "That which is done by us that is not done with a view to eternity is not binding in eternity." The following month at Nauvoo, 11 June 1843, the prophet discussed, among other things, the relationship between angels and gods, and taught that gods have an ascendancy over angels, and that angels remain angels, though some are resurrected to become gods by such revelations as God gives in the most holy place in his temple. The language of the June 1843 discourse evokes the language found in the July 1843 revelation, highlighting the distinction between angels and gods in the resurrected state, explaining that those outside the new and everlasting covenant of marriage remain in their angelic state, a state of lesser power, and they are not gods, but are angels of God forever and ever, Doctrine and Covenants 132:17. Meanwhile, those who receive the new and everlasting covenant and are faithful shall be gods because they have all power and the angels are subject unto them. Verse 20. In July 1843, just a few days after the prophet dictated the revelation on marriage to William Clayton, Joseph preached a public discourse in Nauvoo on the importance and necessity of eternal marriage covenants, using language and doctrines found in the revelation on marriage. Then on August 27th, the prophet preached about the priesthood. He showed that the power of the Melchizedek priesthood was to have the power of endless lives. The reported reference to endless lives may seem peculiar, but it is reminiscent of the revelation on eternal marriage, which states, "This is eternal lives, to know the only wise and true God and Jesus Christ whom he hath sent," Doctrine and Covenants 132:24. Charlotte Haven, a young non-member visiting Nauvoo at the time, heard discussions about the idea of eternal marriage, although not about polygamy. "I had heard," she wrote to her family, "that in some cases the marriage is not only for time, but for time and for eternity. On 5 January 1844, Jacob Scott wrote to Mary Warnock to recount some of the teachings regarding eternal marriage and proxy sealings for spouses who are dead. Several revelations of great utility and uncommon interest have lately been communicated to Joseph and the Church, but where you all are, you cannot obey them. One is that all marriage contracts or covenants are to be everlasting, that is. The parties, if they belong to the Church and will obey the will of God in this relationship to each other, are to be married for both time and eternity. And as respects those whose partners were dead, before this revelation was given to the Church, they have the privilege to be married to their deceased husbands or wives, as the case may be, for eternity. And if it is a man who desires to be married to his deceased wife, a sister in the Church stands as proxy or as a representative of the deceased in attending to the marriage ceremony. And so in the case of a widow who desires to be joined in an everlasting covenant to her dead husband, and if they are not thus married for eternity, they must remain in a state of celibacy and be as the angels, ministering spirits or servants to be married to all eternity, and can never rise to any greater degree of glory. Many members of the Church have already availed themselves of this privilege and have been married to their deceased partners. And in some cases where a man has been married to two or three wives and they are dead, he has been married to them all in the order in which he was married to them while living. And also widows have been married to their dead husbands, but only to one husband. I intend to be married to the wife of my youth before I go to Ireland. I would be respectably glad to have you all here to witness our second nuptials. The work of generation is not to cease forever with the saints in the present life. There are many things connected with this subject which I am not at liberty to communicate to you where you are living, which would make the matter plainer to your minds and more satisfactory. Therefore, beware how you treat this subject, for no doubt it is of God. Joseph Smith, during a discourse in Nauvoo on 10 March 1844, preached against the shedding of innocent blood and the unpardonable sin against the Holy Ghost, which unpardonable sin could not be forgiven. He also spoke of King David in this connection. As recorded by Franklin D. Richards, the prophet illustrated the case of David, said he could not obtain celestial glory, and the reason why he had any hope or obtained a promise that of his seed one should be raised up to reign over Israel forever was because that he had not spoken against the Spirit, and because he had not done this, he was renewed unto repentance and obtained a promise that God would not leave his soul in hell. These public teachings seem to be a reference to the doctrine found in the Revelation on Celestial Marriage, which warns against the shedding of innocent blood and the sin against the Spirit, as well as King David's fall from exaltation and his crime against Uriah the Hittite. On 8 April 1844, Hiram Smith gave a discourse in which he discussed the eternity of the marriage covenant and the principle of proxy marriage for deceased spouses. Hiram's discourse uses language and ideas found in several parts of Section 132. While none of the reports from those who resided in Nauvoo between 1843 and 1844, from sources both friendly and unfriendly to plural marriage, cite the full contents of the revelation, they do echo ideas, phrases, and teachings found throughout Section 132. This suggests that both Joseph Smith and his brother Hiram Smith avoided speaking publicly about polygamy during the last 2 years of their lives. However, as has been documented, they did discuss it in more private settings, including with some who later opposed the teaching about plural marriage and other doctrines contained in the Revelation. For further information on comparing Doctrine and Covenants 132 with other historical documents, see Appendix B. The historical evidence strongly associates the prophet Joseph Smith with the origin of the revelation now known as Doctrine and Covenants 132. The original transcription, Clayton's manuscript, and other surviving manuscripts all seem consistent with other available sources, The Kingsbury manuscript, for example, provides evidence of scribal haste on the last two pages, but not shown anywhere else in the manuscript. This may indicate that the copyist was trying to hurry as he got toward the end. This is consistent with Kingsbury's later testimony that mentions Hiram Smith's premature arrival at the office before he had finished making the copy from Clayton's document. The testimony from a variety of witnesses, some of whom rejected polygamy, also provides substantial evidence that the revelation was not only known to some in Nauvoo in 1843 and 1844, but also that it dealt with polygamy and was the same revelation that later became known as Section 132. Evidence from reports of teachings in Nauvoo in 1843 and 1844 also provide an additional category of proof, echoing passages found throughout the various manuscripts of that revelation. The significance of the documents is not just in their quantity, but in their variety and overlapping consistency. Mark Tensmeyer summarizes this aspect of the evidence, which seems particularly helpful in connection with the historical evidence for Section 132. The reality of Joseph Smith's practice and teachings on plural marriage does not rise or fall on any one piece of evidence, or even one kind of evidence. The sources surrounding the celestial marriage revelation are prime examples of how the overlapping details from contemporary, later, friendly, and hostile witnesses exclude the possibility of it being the product of conspiracy. Many aspects of the academic narrative of polygamy are supported with intricate and diverse sources. Evidence for Smith's polygamy comes from too many sources, and those sources come from too many different times and places. The prospect that a hypothetical conspiracy led by Brigham Young is responsible not only for introducing polygamy into Mormonism, but for falsifying the evidence that Smith was the founder, fails even as a theoretical explanation. This historical evidence points to Joseph Smith being the recipient of the revelation recorded in Doctrine and Covenants 132. The evidence places the wording in the revelation as contemporaneous with Joseph Smith's lifetime as opposed to a later creation.
Part 3. Authorial Stylometric Analysis of Section 132. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints claims that Section 132 is a revelation given through the prophet Joseph Smith, recorded in 1843, and that he may have received this doctrine in the early 1830s. However, as laid out in parts 1 and 2, some people still assert that the verses in Section 132 concerning plural marriage were not written or dictated by Joseph Smith. A common assertion among revisionists is that Brigham Young, or someone else, produced the parts of the text relating to plural marriage. In this part of the study, we test these claims by examining indicators of authorial style in the text, compared to the styles of other potential authors, who, it is claimed, played a role in these competing origin stories of Section 132. We also include scribes, secretaries, and clerks for Joseph during the Nauvoo period. Stylometric analysis. We examine the evidence for authorship of Section 132 using indicators of authorial style in the text. Stylometry, which is the statistical analysis of word use patterns in texts, is well established for authorship attribution. For example, stylometry was used to determine that James Madison was the most probable author of the 12 disputed Federalist Papers. Stylometry has also been successfully applied to religious texts, such as the New Testament. Other researchers have performed stylometric analyses of the Book of Mormon, as well as other church documents. Stylometry works by counting grammatical function words, such as and, the, of, any, and so forth, as style indicators. Since any author tends to use function words in an idiosyncratic pattern, it is possible to create a style profile from an author's known writings that can distinguish him or her from other authors. In a text of disputed authorship, by comparing and contrasting the style profile of potential candidate authors, we can rule out candidates whose word use profile is far from the word use profile in the disputed text. The candidate whose word use profile is closest to the text would be the most probable author. In examining the possible authorship of Section 132, the research question we consider is, what is the stylometric evidence for the authorship of Doctrine and Covenants 132? To answer the question, we examine the stylometric evidence to see if it fits the official church claim for the authorship of Section 132, or if it better fits the claim of different authorship. Because the assertion is that the plural marriage verses of Section 132 are added after Joseph's lifetime, we perform the analysis by splitting the section into two parts, a non-plural marriage part, verses 4 through 28 and 41 through 60, and a plural marriage part, verses 1 through 3, 29 through 40, and 61 through 66. For candidate authors, we included everyone who played a role in the competing origin stories of Section 132. We also included individuals who were Joseph's scribes, secretaries, and clerks in Nauvoo. The candidate authors are Hiram Smith, asked Joseph to dictate the revelation. Joseph Smith dictated the revelation. William Clayton wrote the revelation as Joseph dictated. Joseph Kingsbury made a copy of the revelation and later gave it to Brigham Young. Willard Richards served as Joseph's private secretary in Nauvoo from 1841. Thomas Bullock served as private clerk to Joseph Smith in Nauvoo from 1843 to 1844. Brigham Young, prophet of the church when the revelation was officially announced and published in Salt Lake City. Orson Pratt announced the revelation in General Conference in Salt Lake City and was the church's voice on the subject. To establish the style profile or voice of each of the candidate authors, we used revelations given through Joseph and Brigham, material scribed for Joseph by Clayton and Richards, and the candidate's own writings, such as letters, journals, and articles. The material covers the years 1831 to 1850, with most from the period 1840 to 1845. See Appendix C for a list of the documents for each candidate that were used in the stylometric analysis. Using resampling, we drew 6,000 samples, each of 2,500 words, randomly drawn from each of the 13 sets of texts from the candidate authors, as well as from the two parts of Section 132. To create word use profiles, we counted the occurrences of 221 different function words. To identify the linear combinations of the function word frequencies that best distinguish the sets from each other, we use stepwise discriminant analysis, SDA. Using these linear combinations of function word frequencies, we compared and contrasted the two parts of Section 132 to the sets of texts for each candidate author. Results of the analysis. Figure 1 shows the distance each candidate author's texts are from Doctrine and Covenants 132 with both parts combined. The statistical metric we used is the Mahalanobis distance. which is a relative distance measure that accounts for the correlation between variables and the variances within data sets. It is a robust measure of dissimilarity, widely used in multivariate classification analysis. In our study, the Mahalanobis distances are 12-dimensional measures of dissimilarity. The distances displayed in Figure 1 show the least dissimilar sets of texts at the bottom of the chart, with the most dissimilar at the top. It is clearly evident in Figure 1 that the revelatory sections of Joseph Smith from both the Kirtland and Nauvoo periods are the least dissimilar. Joseph Smith's doctrinal epistles and instructions, his texts scribed by William Clayton, and Brigham Young's revelatory texts are the next in dissimilarity. But they are nearly twice as far from Section 132 as Joseph's revelatory sections in the Doctrine and Covenants. The personal writings of all of the candidate authors are distinctly dissimilar to the text of Section 132 because these texts are over two times and nearly three times farther from Section 132 than Joseph Smith's revelatory sections. We now look more closely at the five sets of texts with the least dissimilarity from Section 132. Joseph Smith's early revelations, later revelations, and epistles and instructions, Brigham Young's revelations, and Joseph Smith's writings ascribed by William Clayton. Figure 2 shows a three-dimensional graph with 99.9% confidence ellipsoids around the samples to display the results. The ellipsoids represent a volume within which it is reasonable to estimate the author's style to 99.9% confidence. If the ellipsoids do not overlap, then it is unreasonable to claim they represent the same authorial style. The evidence indicates they are different styles. If the ellipsoids overlap, then there is insufficient evidence to indicate that the authorial styles are different. The styles are either the same or indistinguishably similar. Only the five sets of texts closest in style to Section 132 are shown, since all the other data sets are so far away that they can be easily eliminated as displaying the same authorial style as Section 132. The three dimensions, functions A, B, and C, are the three dimensions that are linear combinations of the grammatical words that measure the authorial distinctiveness of the candidate author's text. In Figure 2, function A is a linear combination of word frequencies that identifies the greatest distinction among all the data sets. Function A separates Joseph Smith's early revelations in Doctrine and Covenants 38 through 57, shown in black, and later revelations in Doctrine and Covenants 124 through 126, shown in red, from his material scribed by William Clayton, blue, and his epistles and instructions in Doctrine and Covenants 127 through 131, green. Function B is a different linear combination of word frequencies that identifies the next greatest distinction among the data sets. Function B clearly separates Brigham Young's authorial style in his revelations, light blue, from Joseph Smith's revelatory style. Function C is the dimension with the next greatest distinction among the data sets, and it separates Joseph Smith's non-revelatory texts, as scribed by Clayton, blue, from Joseph's epistles and instructions recorded in the Doctrine and Covenants, green. To more fully show the distinctions in authorial style, we present another view of the results in Figure 3 by rotating about the vertical axis the three-dimensional display 45 degrees counterclockwise. We present another view of the results in Figure 4 after rotating the three-dimensional display 90 degrees counterclockwise again. The question is, using the same linear combinations of function word frequencies for the two parts of section 132, the non-plural marriage portion and the plural marriage portion, where will they be compared to these five data sets? Also, will the two parts of section 132 be near each other or far apart? Will the plural marriage portion be near Brigham Young or near Joseph's early or later revelations? Will it be near Joseph's material ascribed by Clayton, near the epistles and instructions, or not close to any of these? Figure 5 shows where the two parts of section 132 are among the five sets from the same viewpoint as in figure 2. The two parts of section 132 are closest to each other, shown in brown and purple, and they are both close to the early Doctrine and Covenants revelatory sections shown in black. SDA classifies 100% of the samples from both parts of section 132 to the early revelations. They are both next closest to the later Doctrine and Covenants revelatory sections red. They are not at all close to Joseph's other material, dark blue and green, which are also later in time and of a different genre. They are far from Brigham Young, light blue, or anyone else considered, all of whom are so far away that they are outside the cube. Figures 6 and 7 display rotations of the cube to further indicate the distinctions among the texts. It is evident that the two parts of section 132 clearly group with Joseph's texts at the bottom of the display and are far from Brigham's revelations at the top. Figure 8 zooms in on the two parts of section 132 and the early revelations. It is evident that the plural marriage and non-plural marriage parts of 132 are not meaningfully distinct from each other, and they are not meaningfully distinct from the early revelatory sections. To show more fully the overlap in authorial style, we present three more views of these sets by rotating the cube display. Figure 9 shows the front view, figure 10 a top view, and figure 11 shows a side view. In all three displays, we can see considerable overlap of the revelatory texts. No matter how one looks at the results, the plural marriage and non-plural marriage parts are not meaningfully distinguishable from each other, and they group closely with the early revelatory sections. Contrary to Richard and Pamela Price's opinion, as stated in Part 1, the grammatical patterns in both parts of Section 132 are similar to Joseph Smith's word use pattern and dissimilar from Brigham Young's word use pattern. Based on the results of the analysis, we found no stylometric evidence contrary to the Church's official declaration of the authorship of Doctrine and Covenants 132. If the revelation indeed originated in the early 1830s, then it should be congruent in style with other contemporaneous sections of the Doctrine and Covenants. This is what the results show. Further, we found no evidence of authorial style difference within the plural marriage and non-plural marriage texts of section 132, thus making remote the possibility of different authorship. The results of the stylometric analyses can be viewed in even greater detail in an immersive virtual reality three-dimensional display at ldsstylometrics.org/D-132, and then the word authorship with a capital A and a closing slash. Additional analyses are presented in Appendix D. These analyses demonstrate the validity of the methodology used, and they further corroborate the results. Finally, see Appendix E for an in-depth critical evaluation of an unpublished but circulated analysis of Section 132 conducted by Ethan Lloyd. Conclusion of Part 3. assertions contrary to Joseph's authorship of section 132 are not congruent with the stylometric evidence. The stylometric evidence does not support the assertion that Brigham Young wrote section 132, either in part or as a whole. Further, stylometric evidence does not indicate that any of the other candidate authors provided the words for the revelation. The authorial styles of both parts of section 132 are not distinguishably different, and they both align with other relevant sections of the Doctrine and Covenants. The stylometric evidence is consistent with the Church's claimed origin of the revelation.
Summary and conclusions of this study. The combined historical and stylometric evidence presented in this study strongly supports the long-standing claim that Doctrine and Covenants 132 originated with Joseph Smith and was dictated by him in July 1843, rather than being composed later by Brigham Young or any other potential author. Multiple independent contemporary witnesses, both friendly and antagonistic to plural marriage, as well as those who remained in the church and those who did not, consistently reported the existence, content, and public and private readings of the revelation during Joseph Smith's lifetime. While no surviving diary entries in Joseph's own hand replicate the wording of section 132, extensive first-hand reports by his scribes and close associates taken during his Nauvoo period sermons and instructions document him teaching the same doctrines and using language closely aligned with the text of the revelation. In addition, stylometric analyses show that the linguistic features in section 132 are congruent with the prophet's other revelations in the Doctrine and Covenants, even as far back as 1831. Thus, the mutually supportive consistency of the historical records and statistical authorship analysis make highly implausible the alternative assertions for the authorship of section 132.
Appendix D, additional analyses. Validation studies. We performed additional analyses to test the validity of our procedure before conducting the actual analysis of the textual data. We included in the set of candidate authors two authors who we knew should be ruled out as authors of section 132, called negative controls. One was Parley P. Pratt, who contributed to many early church documents, but who had no known connection to the origin of section 132. As expected, if the analysis methodology is accurate, the results showed that his authorial style was distinctly different from that of section 132. The other negative control was James J. Strang. Using his own writings and claimed revelations, his authorial style was easily seen as incongruent with section 132 texts, as expected for someone who is not a potential author. Interestingly, Strang's revelations are closer than Brigham Young's revelations to section 132 texts, which provides further evidence against Brigham Young as the author of section 132. Another validating analysis was to test the power of our procedure to detect even small textual differences that we knew existed, called positive controls. We determined the sample size and number of resamples so that the results were stable, and we detected the known positive controls. Additionally, some people have suggested that the counsel to Emma Smith in Doctrine and Covenants 132 verses 51 through 56 belongs with the plural marriage verses. Therefore, we included these verses in the plural marriage verses and found that doing so did not change any of the analysis results. Corroborating study. To corroborate our results, we use multivariate hierarchical cluster analysis. which is a classification technique that groups into clusters each data point and sets of data so that each point is in a cluster containing the most similar data points, and the clusters are separated by their dissimilarity. This procedure classified 700 data points, each representing one of the samples of words randomly drawn from the seven groups of texts. Cluster analysis correctly classified 99% of the data points into their respective groups. It connected the groups that are closest to each other, and then the groups that are the next closest, and so on, until all the groups were connected. Figure 12 displays a dendrogram of the clusters. The horizontal axis is the relative distance the clusters are from each other. The longer a horizontal line is that connects clusters, the more distant or dissimilar the clusters are from each other. Figure 12 shows that the plural marriage and non-plural marriage portions of section 132 cluster together tightly, and they form a group with the early revelatory sections. The later revelatory sections then join with that group, even though they are somewhat dissimilar. Joseph Smith's epistles and instructions in his material scribed by William Clayton cluster together, and they are separate from the revelatory sections. Next, Brigham Young's revelations link with Joseph Smith's non-revelatory cluster, but are highly dissimilar. The cluster analysis confirms the results presented in Part 3 that the plural marriage and non-plural marriage portions of Section 132 are similar to each other, and together they are closely similar to the early revelation sections, while Brigham Young's revelations are highly dissimilar.
This has been a recording of historical and stylometric evidence for the authorship of Doctrine and Covenants 132 by Paul J. Fields, Stephen T. Dinsley, Jr., Matthew Roper, and Larry Bassist, published in Interpreter, a Journal of Latter-day Saint Faith and Scholarship, read by the authors. This recording is copyrighted under a Creative Commons license and may be freely distributed if it remains unchanged. The journal and its website are credited and is for non-commercial use. A printed version of this and many other articles can be found at journal.interpreterfoundation.org. More information about the Interpreter Foundation, along with a wide array of additional resources, can be found at interpreterfoundation.org.